elected officials'
phone number in the county, and then also the heads of the county departments and stuff like that. Very handy.
The chair will call the Human Services Committee meeting of September 8th, 2014, to order. The time is 6:31. Ms. Davis, could you please call the roll?
Sure. David Hallman?
Present.
Mike Gable?
Here.
Anita Johnson?
Here.
Aaron Decker?
Here.
Leah Blau?
Here.
Greg Retzlaff?
Here.
David Arrington? Did you hear anything from him? Neither did I. Julia Alberth, excused?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Brianna Ayers.
Here.
Okay.
Agenda item number one, citizen comments. Are there any citizens who wish to speak? If so, please step forward and address the committee. State your name and address for the record. You have 5 minutes.
Oh, nice. Drag it out. Get your computer function.
Okay. Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. Agenda item two, approval of the minutes of... Is that three? Yeah, three. Approval of the minutes of 8/4/14.
Motion to approve.
Motion second. By Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Johnson.
Decker.
I didn't. Sorry.
I know, we're twins. We're so much alike.
I didn't know who said it. I apologize. Youth and Governance?
Okay. Yes.
Whatever. Just confidence. Okay. Yes.
All right.
Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The minutes have been approved. Agenda item number four.
This one's going to be a little tougher.
No. Stop looking loose at project with Ms. Megan Jacott, who is not present. She is away at school. It was the expressed desire of Chairman Kubicki that she present to this committee, even though she already presented to the county board. I got a couple of notes on that from him. So that is why she appears on our agenda, even though we have already heard from her in person. I think all of you were present for that county board meeting. If not, this is your moment. You have been emailed her packet of stuff she's been working on to ask her whatever questions come to mind.
So she's not necessarily going to do a presentation. She's already done that. She's looking for questions that she can help answer for you.
Hello.
Megan?
Yes.
Hi, it's John Jansen. How are you? All right, you are on speakerphone in front of the speakerphone's in front of the Human Service Committee. Let's see if I can turn that up.
Did we catch you at a bad time?
Yeah.
No, I just had done with rugby practice, and then I went to dinner, and now I'm in my dorm room ready to go. It's great before I go do homework.
All right, well, we have all of our committee members present. Maybe we can just go around the table and introduce ourselves. Of course, we've spoken already. I'm chair of the committee, David Hallman. Go left around the table.
Supervisor Greg Retzlaff.
Supervisor Aaron Decker.
Supervisor Anita Johnson.
Okay. Youth and Governance, Brianna Ayers.
Supervisor Leah Blau.
Supervisor Mike Gable. Nice job, Megan.
Thank you.
I'm back.
You can hear everybody okay?
Yeah, you're all good.
Okay, great. Was there anything in particular you wanted to highlight for us or mention about this that you didn't mention at the county board meeting?
I think that if I had more time at the county board meeting, I would have mentioned more about the interviewees who I saw as being... like, really have fallen through the cracks of Kenosha Social Services, I guess you could say, because I feel like the human services that we provide in the city and the county are very good. They serve a lot of people, but unfortunately there is that group of people where they are kicked out of inns, they are kicked out of shelters, they just don't have the cognitive processing to figure out, this is my medication I need to get, this is how I need to get my life back together. They are... have their addictions, their afflictions. So if I were to do this project next year, I would definitely more extended to focus on the mental health issues and talking about the homeless people in Kenosha who do fall through the cracks of those programs. So I'll say that I know that there's a lot to cover and a lot of things so that need to be organized and carried out with running human services for an entire county. However, I do think that a minority could turn into a majority, thank you to say.
Were there any committee members that had questions for her?
I got, this is Mike Gable. I got one, Megan. I was asked, I showed somebody your little booklet, and they asked a question, how do some of these people, 20 years, 3.5 years, where is the failing? Is it us, or is it just, you know, we're not doing enough for them, or what? I mean, 20 years to be homeless?
Mm-hmm. When I first met Doug when I was an intern at the Outreach Center, and he taught me as a social work major and as a super bright-eyed, bushy-tailed proud student that there are such things as lost causes. Like, Doug is, that's Doug. He's a sweet guy. He is a great person, but he suffers from chronic homelessness. And when he tried to get in a program, I talked to people who had him in INS and also tried to give him some housing programs. When he tried to get in those, it just doesn't fit. Because their umbrella application, it doesn't fit. So for the people that have been homeless for 20 years, it would literally take a complete one-on-one rehabilitation, which is just impossible to do. So that's what I would say, that dogs. He definitely has, like, he's just mixed up there in the brain, and he has no idea what's up or down sometimes, and you can just need that one-on-one-ness, but again, like, that's something that's impossible. But I feel that with a day shelter, an all-day, 24/7 open day shelter, that could be possible in Kenosha, to have people that are more trained and educated, that don't just have, like, a career certificate, but have, like, background in psychology, social work, policy, like you need more well, like really well-rounded people that can handle these chronic homelessness cases.
Yeah, I see there's a couple like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I guess I understand. I can answer the question for the guy.
Anyone else? I have one that comes to my mind. I know that the picture is very different. Urban versus rural. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Urban versus rural homelessness?
Yeah, in terms of the work that you're doing.
Okay. The only experience slash knowledge I have of any rural homelessness is I gave you the point in time count, but we really, in all of Kenosha County, we only had one gentleman go past the highway into the rural area. Because they're not really around there because they need to be close to the services. So I really am not educated on rural homelessness. I really wanted to more focus on the downtown area and uptown area because that is where ordinary, average, everyday people see the homeless people. Like even as I was giving the booklets out, I was going to the different downtown fences and I would hand them one. They'd look through it. I'd talk to them. There was no way this guy just came in here earlier today. He's homeless. And like, I seen him last week. I would have never guessed. But I didn't really focus on rural homelessness, and I especially focused on urban homelessness because it's even close to my home. And just with my work schedule, it was easier to drive 3 minutes to First Camp or 5 minutes to Urban Outreach and get those interviews done there.
Do you think that that'll be a area of future study for consideration?
Rural homelessness?
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be very interesting. Very interesting because, I mean, just with what little I learned about it at the point in time count, they explained, because someone brought that up, and why do we only have one gentleman going to this huge area past the highway, and they explained to us that, well, I mean, where are you going to get your food, where are you going to get your clean water, where are you going to have access to any, like, warm bathroom, and one thing that I thought was most interesting, we did the point in time count, is that we didn't find anyone really sleeping alone, and I asked my home. I get to visit my friends at the homeless shelter. And I said, why do you guys grow up so much? Like, for these names, like, you do not want to be, well, as much as you want to try to have that privacy, as much as you want to be alone, because you don't want to be sleeping with a bunch of strangers, just snore or might think a little bit, or have some, like, anger issues or abuses or negative influences, you also don't want to be alone. So I think that was the biggest thing of why there isn't so much rural homelessness, is that, and just psychologically wanting to be around other people. That's also something that they attribute it to. You only be so alone so much. So I would be interested in doing it, but again, if I were to send this project or study this project further, I would definitely focus on the mentally ill, drug abuse, and alcoholism, and try to maybe create some sort of a platform draft solution.
Supervisor Decker has a question for you.
A couple questions. Okay, I read through this booklet. What do you want us, or what were you hoping to teach us, or the people that you give this booklet to? What was your goal of creating this booklet?
When I was in Northern Ireland and we first arrived and we were presented with a variety of peace process strategies that they've been using over the past decade, one of them was conversation and dialogue. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what? How is just talking, like ordinary people talking about something, like that's not going to do anything. It needs to go to like the power. It needs to go to people that make these programs, the people that enforce the segregation over there. Like, it needs to go, like, what are ordinary people just talking going to do? So after 3.5 months, I learned what the power of regular people talking can do, or how much power is behind conversation. And I wanted to do a project this summer that I felt like I could leave, because I haven't been to school. I could leave and feel like I did something significant, that someone read it and had either just even the tiniest bit change of mind, and then was able to pass on the booklet to another person and maybe them had the tiniest bit change of mind, or for someone who already kind of agreed with what my book said, but then showed to someone who was a little more narrow-minded and didn't have those same views as they speak. Like, not every homeless person is, but not every homeless person is an addict. And that you can't have this stereotype. So I guess you could say my main purpose of it was just to raise awareness through conversation. I started with having conversations with the people, and it's really comfortable to go into a homeless shelter. So uncomfortable in the beginning. You feel like a black sheep, being you are a black sheep. You don't technically belong there. But once you get over that and you talk to these people, some really powerful social change on a grassroots level can happen. And I know that if the homeless people were to walk into the city council chambers or the county boardroom wearing the same thing they've been wearing for 3 days, not having washed themselves for 10 days, there'd definitely be some judgment. Like, it's human nature. I mean, it happens, but luckily with my education and my background and my passion, I can act as a representation for those people and speak on their behalf and tell their stories and then move along the conversation, because the homeless people I talk to, they can't make a public booklet of their stories. Like, they just don't have the means to do that, but I do. So that was my point, is to take their stories, make them legitimate, start conversations for the people in Kenosha to say that, no, everyone who is walking in the direction of the train station, the suitcase is not going to Chicago for the weekend. They're going to shelter, they're going to seek the bush, they're going to sleep along the fountain downtown because there's heat there in the winter. Like, that's what's happening. There needs to be less ignorance. There needs to be more looking. Just the power of acknowledgement was all I was looking to do. Acknowledgement, conversation, and then hopefully to inspire people to do something. I don't know what that something is, but I don't want to say it's doing the day shelter, because I didn't want this project to be like a political game piece, either for or against the shelter, but it's like something. And I don't feel like I have the education or the background yet to figure out what that something is.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Blau has a question for you.
Hi, Megan. This is Leah. I have a question. Since you're back at school, how are you managing to maintain your program, you know, the awareness that you've started about the homelessness? Is there someone here or other people that are working with you during your absence or while you're back at school?
Yes, I'm As for Kenosha work, I still have like the stop, look, and listen email alias, and I've been checking it, and there's people that have been like, where can I get more booklets? I want to present this to my women's club, or I want to present this to my Bible group, and I've been in contact with them, giving them a full PDF, giving them full permission to reprint, and just don't change anything, keep it what it is. And then also, there's a group in Kenosha, they're called like a Confusion Art Group, who they're doing like a poetry reading, music playing event, and they wanted me to come read the story of the homeless, and I, in fact, were included in my book, and I can't, I'm back at school. So with there, I told them to do this open creative license, do whatever they want, and they'll be having actors that kind of assume the character of the homeless people I interviewed, and they'll be telling them their stories at this art event. And then after the work I'm doing here, I'm partnering with some sophomore students who are doing, it's called a project called SOAR, which is called the Homeless Outreach Project. And we are going to make care packages to distribute to homeless people in the Minneapolis and Northfield area. And a lot of, I met with them yesterday, and it's a really, again, great detailed sophomore that came up with this idea and heard about my project on Facebook, and we're like, hey, like, are you willing to help us out with this project? Because I wasn't sure what I was going to do with this when I got here. And I told them, yeah, sure. And we met last night. And they wanted to do these big backpacks and this big this and this big that. I'm like, guys, the hard thing that you take time to realize about homelessness is that there's no storage, there's no closet, there's no dresser, there's no garage, there's no basement. Like, what you carry around with you have. So right now I'm acting as a mentor for these group of kids that want to do, students that want to do a homelessness project. And also they were super ambitious, like, we're going to go to the cities and we're going to drop them off. And I'm like, well, guys, there's also homeless people here in our tiny little Northfield, like a really small college town. And even though everyone's all focused on, gotta help the cities, gotta help the cities, like, there's also homeless people here. So kind of helping them reel in and focus on doing some efforts in Northfield. And then let's worry about what's going on in the city. So let's take care of the people who are outside first. And then also helping them with the ethics, I guess you say, raising awareness. And I definitely learned a lot about ethics from doing this project and how it's a respectful way to represent homeless people and not abuse their situation. So I'm also helping them with advertising and how to do it in a way that's respectful and ethical as well.
Any other questions? Supervisor Johnson has a question for you.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment. You know, I just want to commend you on what you've done. It's amazing. And also, I just want to say that, you know, how you were stating that you don't know what needs to be done. This is always the first step. Raising awareness to anything and is always the first step to getting support on the solution and to getting people to think about solutions. But I just wanted to say I think that what you're doing is incredible.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Anyone else? Just a couple of things, since it looks like nobody has anything else. You're a former youth and governance member, correct?
Yeah.
And which committee did you sit on?
Human Services. I did on Human Services. Woo-hoo! My first year. And when they redid the county government, I was one of the services on Human Services the second year, but they said, no, we want... like a veteran human governance member to get on executive because we think that that'd be a better situation. The agenda's going to be more intense, so we want someone that can handle that. So that's why they sent me over to executive, and I was like, fine, whatever. And it was good. It was good because it made me get a more well-rounded view of how county government operates and how much actually goes into it. It's not just about human services, even though I look for, but okay.
Well, I want to say thank you for what you're doing. I don't know what it is that you told Chairman Kubicki, but he was very insistent that you somehow communicate with this committee and mentioned that you were a former youth and governance member. In fact, he slipped me a note, like a third grader, saying we had to have you. And then he sent me a text message, which I think is probably the first text he sent in his natural born life. So we've got you, and just in all honesty from myself, thank you for being another person under 30 who actually gives a damn. There aren't enough of us.
Yeah, I try.
So it doesn't sound like you can stop. So I know you've sort of alluded to it a little bit, but what is the sort of the next phase of this look like for you, or do you need some time to sort of discern that? Is it something that'll become clear in the next couple months?
Right now I'm looking at two options. There's a really great internship program that's in Minnesota in the Twin Cities that is through my school. They give you a really nice stipend, you get academic credit for it, you're living with other college students, and you're out doing these various internships at different sites all throughout the city. Like, some people are working with demographic change, some people are working at Planned Parenthood organizations. It's a huge variety, and you come back, you eat communal dinner together, you host events for the school when you get back, which is a really immersive experience. So what I might do is I might take this project and try to recreate it in another city to see where that would go. But it's a super competitive program, and let's say I don't get into it, then I would know that ahead of time, and I would apply for, like, a First Aid OLS to pay me to go back to Kenosha and to do this project as a full-time job. Because the problem was this past summer, I don't even know when I left, between taking the interviews, typing them up, working with funders, formatting, talking to the printer, and then I also had an 8-hour job in Illinois and worked a lot of overtime. Like, it was really, really hard to do. But I definitely would like to re-extend this project next summer and focus on making a similar booklet, but also putting more focus on this is my recommendation, this is my draft, and maybe even being able to mentor someone and not have it be so much independent. Like, I totally do not do this under anyone. This is just me. I didn't even have, like, a professor that I did it under. It was just me, myself, and I, which is also really tough, not being like a 501c3 organization or something. So that's what I would do differently. Extend it to do mental health, alcoholism, drug abuse, that area of homelessness. Do it under a mentor so I can learn more. Take it on as a full-time job so I don't die again this summer, and try to get as much funding for it through my school so that I can use the cover job and just completely devote myself to it so it can be bigger, better, there's quality, and it longer. Not have the focus come out right away to school, stuff like that.
Are you open to any suggestions here?
Oh, yeah, of course.
It looks like, since you've sort of started this thing here and you've gotten people's attention, particularly politicians, you may want to work them for the connections that they have, since it sounds like many of them are kind of curious to see what the next phase of this is going to look like for Kenosha. That's just sort of my two cents on that. So you may know some county supervisors that might, you know, put you with other people so that you could continue this in some fashion. Just an FYI.
Yeah, I definitely would be interested or be more proactive next summer about using my county government connections, like the people I've met through using governance. But like with this project, it was really hard to convince people that I had my stuff together. Like, I would ask people like, oh, what? Like, shadow under you, can you fund this, can you do this, can you do that? And I would send my PDF of my project, and there was just a lot of skepticism, which I thought was really surprising, because I thought that I was pretty good at presenting it in a way that was like, this is a good investment of your time, your energy, of funds, like, trust me, it's going to be okay, I'm not going to let you down. So I would, at least going into it next summer, I would have like a concrete physical booklet and PDF packet of everything that I did to say, hey, like, this is concrete trust, like, you've been taking me under and I'm not going to let you down.
Supervisor Gable apparently has another question for you.
No, Megan, like I say, I was wondering why, I wish you would have contacted me this summer. I could have helped you with some of the fundraising. And, you know, the offer's open next summer. Just give me a holler.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we'll go out and strong arm some people for money.
Yeah, you might not want to say that.
I'm not fundraising. How hard it is, but I'll be more optimistic next year.
Well, if we make the claim that we support the young people that come from this community, then I think it's wise to hold our feet to the fire. That's just always been my thing. That's all, you know. I've always been that way. That's nothing new. Anybody got anything else? All right, anything else you want to share before we part ways?
I think that's it a booklet. There is a Stop, Look, and Listen to Know that email alias. Feel free to send any other questions, comments that might come up during the meeting or later tonight in your drive home from the meeting. I'm sure I check it quite often. So just feel free to contact me. My class is not that busy yet, so now would be a good time, the next week and a half. Otherwise, I don't know what my schedule will be. So but just feel free. I'm very open to communicate, phone, email, whatever.
Okay. We'll have a great semester. Thank you for speaking with us. Stay safe and don't do anything crazy.
You're like my mom. I just got home from rugby practice. What do you mean, you're like crazy?
Oh, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
Fine.
Okay.
Great. Well, have a good day with your guys' meeting.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Great job.
All right. Agenda item number 5 from the Health Department, resolution to modify the 2014 budget for the Comprehensive Asthma Control Collaborative Grant Program.
Good evening. I'd like to seek approval for funds that we received for comprehensive asthma control through strategies that we will be connecting with the Center for Disease Control and the State of Wisconsin, the Health Services Committee through the state. They chose the Kenosha County Health Department to assist them with this project, so we feel very fortunate about that. The goal is to improve the health outcomes of adults and children that have asthma in our community. The amount of money is $75,500. It helps to support 2 half-time positions. One would be a case manager and the other a navigator to assist individuals to get connected with care. This is an evidence-based home visitation program. We're replicating what was done in Connecticut. The program is called Putting on Airs, and it focuses on indoor asthma triggers and education about asthma and chronic illness. The goal is to reduce the number of school and work absences and also emergency department visits. The community partners that we will be working with is the Kenosha Community Health Center, the Kenosha Unified School District, and the hospital emergency departments. We'll have selected schools, pilot schools, at the Unified School District. The 2 positions, the case manager would be providing asthma education, the Putting on Airs program, and they will assist clients in developing a asthma action plan, their own action plan for when they have a trigger or their asthma is reactive. They'll be looking at the environmental triggers in their own home, doing a home assessment if needed, and trying to eliminate those triggers. The navigator, the community health navigator, and a navigator within Kenosha has been quite successful, this model, this concept, and so we're now utilizing the same concept with asthma. They'll address the obstacles in accessing primary care, so if individuals can't get into the medical system, we'll be working with the Kenosha Community Health Center and the hospitals. We'll be looking at referrals and any barriers that they can, that individuals might be facing, and also assisting them to adhere to their medications, because that's typically some of the problems. Maybe they can't access their medications, they're not taking them as prescribed, following through with their doctors, understanding the importance of maintaining their medication, and making them aware of the resources in our community. The strategies that are going to be put in place are in-home asthma education, as I mentioned, the environmental assessments, educating and empowering people with their asthma to navigate healthcare. We're also going to coordinate the Living Well with Chronic Conditions workshop called Plus Asthma, the school-based education for students, staff, and parents. We're going to coordinate the EPA FLAG program with the American Lung Association. I don't know if some of you might have seen that. It's the colored flags that I can pass that around. The colored flags that would go up based on the air quality in our region, and also assisting with the Children's Health Alliance of Wisconsin in hosting an asthma management and primary care training. So if you have any questions, otherwise I seek your approval for these grant funds.
I have questions.
Supervisor Retzloff.
I guess the only question I have is, you're looking to hire two part-time case managers, is that right?
Two half-time people, one a case manager and one a navigator.
Okay. Do we not have the staff now to do this? We don't. The case managers that we presently have can't do this? They're not adverse to, are they not efficient in this type of thing, or?
We actually have an individual who one grant is ending, who we would be able to transition into this program, who does have background in this area. She also started the Kenosha Asthma Coalition in our community, and we're looking that she would be the half-time case manager, and then she also has another half-time program that she's working on, which is Transform Wisconsin. These individuals will also be trained in the asthma awareness program, so they will receive special certification.
Okay. That's all I got.
Supervisor Deck.
It's a three-year grant. How many, or what are your goals for how many numbers of people you want to help, or?
Well, right now.
Or visits you want to make, or that kind of stuff.
Kenosha, specifically, we have the fourth highest, for Wisconsin, Kenosha has the fourth highest emergency department visits and the third highest for hospitalizations due to asthma. So that's the data sets that we will be utilizing and then trying to bring those numbers down. Again, remember, depends on the years and what data sets, but we'll be probably doing real-time data collection in order that we can bring people into the program and divert them from emergency department visits. So we'll be working with the hospitals, working with their current data in regards to the emergency department visits that are occurring with adults and with children. Those are the referrals that we're seeking as we work closely with both of our hospitals, and then working with that client base, then we can also then see repeat visitors through those data sets.
Is there a specific number you're hoping to see each year? Or, I mean, are you hoping to assess 100 homes a year? Or what's your, do you have a number set?
That will be based on the individuals that are referred into the program. So some of this is system building. So it's working with the hospitals to share their data. That's part of the system. Working with the emergency departments, doing some training, and then accessing the individuals that agree to enter into the program. So it's, again, it's a system starting at the ground floor, working our way up. Hard numbers are real hard to tell based on when you're just trying to initiate something new in our community and collaborate with institutions.
Okay, and this brings a new question. You said you're gonna work with the hospitals. They're gonna give you information on who who's gone into the hospital with asthma. With HIPAA laws, how do we get the county, how does this hospital, how are they able to give the county that information?
They seek approval. That, again, is part of the system where they give permission to release their name to the health department. It's something similar that we do with our collaboration with WIC and pregnant moms. WIC sees the moms, lets them know that the health department does a home visitation program. The moms agree to us contacting them, and they send us the referral. So that's part of that system building of a mechanism that we can collaborate, that we can also assist the hospitals reduce their costs, because these frequent flyers, so to speak, they're very costly in the medical system.
Okay, so moving, it'll be people moving forward that go in. It's not people that have been there now that they're gonna go back and
that's,
call.
That's the data that supports why it's important for us
okay.
to move forward.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Supervisor Johnson.
So when we do like a health outcome study like this,
mm-hmm.
And I'm certain at the end of 3 years, we're going to see that it has impact. The money will stop in 3 years. Do we generally pick it up, or do they process all the data quick enough to say this is important, let's implement this and start? Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
because at the end of 3 years, like, this is a study. They'll have to sign consents to be a part of it, just like if you were a study for a pharmaceutical. And at the end of 3 years, it's just going to stop, I assume. So, but I would assume that this is going to make a huge impact.
Correct. And then we look for other funding sources, and then we take it to either, we either seek a renewal through the Center for Disease Control, because again, this is passed through. It's supporting the state with their larger project. We're a pilot project. Mm-hmm. We are then charged with also mentoring other counties within this state. Mm-hmm. But all of this that we collect over this time period, we then have a model program that then we can take to another entity to seek other funding, such as, you know, the Medical College of Wisconsin, you know, their HWPP, those programs, those funding sources that last another 5 years, and that are larger funding. Again, this is grassroots, ground floor, starting. This is what we do best at the health department.
I've noticed that.
Thank you.
That's excellent. And that's what you'll do then. You'll just go out and try to
absolutely
find it wherever you can get it.
It doesn't stop. We keep going.
Okay.
And we've been successful.
Yeah.
I see the $75,000 is for the first year.
Correct.
You have to reapply every year?
They do that, and that happens with a lot of grants. What they're doing is they it's sort of that testing again. If you're going to do what you say you're going to do, we've always done above and beyond. We're overachievers.
I have a few. One, and this is a point of a failing of my own personal education, in-home asthma. I'm aware of particulate matter and car emissions and, you know, our coal-fired power plant being major factors. Other than mold inside the home, in-home asthma escapes me as a concept, so give me something to grab onto.
Smoking.
Okay.
Bed bugs.
Bed bugs is a contributor to asthma?
Yeah. Absolutely. Dust.
Not keeping your place clean.
Right. The air filters, many people that are, the homes that they're living in are very old, and the heating systems are very old, and so often the ducts, air ducts are not cleaned, they're filled, and so people are breathing that. But bed bugs, yes, absolutely, because of their debris that they shed is a trigger for asthma.
Even continual exposure to an allergen, like if your mom always uses a chemical on the floor and you're allergic to it and over and over and over.
Grass, trees, I mean, there's a lot. People have different things, but looking at those environmental factors that can be changed. So something as simple as covers for their pillows, bedding, you know, for their mattresses, because they might have old mattresses. So you look at some of those easy fixes that potentially can make a difference, in addition to following their medical plan, which means taking their medication to reduce the inflammation. Asthma is just inflammation in your respiratory tract and in your lungs.
I know that, and this is due to my own error, that we have sort of semi-retired the monthly updates. And as I was listening to you, I was reminded that health goes for and obtains, you know, grants, not necessarily a lot, but what you can get approved, that's what you work off of. Now with the data collection, there's a lot more probably that we should be informed of as it happens or as things close. And again, this is my own error that the monthly updates that we used to have as for our committee have been retired, because some things have been good about this term, other things not so good about. This is one of them I've not been good about. We need to bring that back, so that this can be a part of that, and we can sort of see it and be a part of that process, because certainly as we're talking to our constituents, as we're supposed to do, this can be something that we communicate to them if they happen to mention it at the door, or we happen to maybe even notice it as an issue.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because I really do look to the leadership of this committee to spread the word, just as with the young lady prior, that you can be, it's so powerful, the information that you can then take out to your constituents in the area that you oversee and share the information and also connect people with the resources that are available in our community.
I'm trying to recall quickly how many other times this term you've been before this committee or what you already have in progress, and it escapes me. I'm a bad chairman in that regard because I should be able to recall it like that, and I can't.
Our list is so long.
No, a good chairman should know. Really, I don't. So if there's something, you know, in progress for like, this is what, September to October. Yeah. Even though I screwed up, we have to restart that.
It's not a problem. We can get that to you. I'll pass it through John. And
yeah, because I know there's things going on in other divisions too, right, that we should be in the loop on.
We're happy to share that information.
I think that, oh no, I had something else. Is there any way to utilize technology in terms of this? I don't know that you can make a map of like Asma and Kenosha County, not necessarily persons that.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and actually we do have some preliminary information. We have done some GIS mapping with our lead cases, and so then we can replicate this with Asma again, but it's going to be pretty concentrated in the typical areas that you would expect because of the housing market would be the majority of the reasons. Then we'll also have a better understanding how much, whether it's, our Lake Michigan, there's so many variables, pollen, seasonal pollen, but right, you know, as the air quality shifts too. So it'll be interesting, but we can definitely start thinking about that and put that together. We have connections with the planning and development. They're still doing all mapping, and they have the expertise.
Yeah, they're really excited to do stuff, and I've been dialoguing with them about potential ideas. So I'm curious to see, because I know there's a lot about data concerning health, what it is that we've got where we can make something happen and
absolutely
get a better
sure
picture.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Supervisor,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have just one quick little thing here. I'm reading this a little bit more. Asthma's been around for a long time. We all know about it. And comments that you made prove that there's been asthma studies out there, you know, bed bugs, you know what you said. Okay. You already know that. If you go to the person's house and go, you know, do you know that bad filters are getting all this? Isn't that already going on? I mean, are you saying, okay, person goes into the hospital, they have asthma. They get treated and it's the end of their world. They must know a whole lot of people must be able to help them with what is causing your asthma, right? A doctor's going to go, here's your, what are you, is your house contaminated? Do you have these problems? I'm trying to get exactly in my mind what you're going to do that's different than already going on or already known.
Because it's not as simple as you might think. And it really depends on the resources that an individual or their family might have, their education level. When you sit down with the doctor and you're given a diagnosis, often people don't hear all the words that are expressed or understand. It's very helpful to have another person, whether it's you, me, when we're given especially a very traumatic diagnosis, very helpful to have another pair of ears. What we're going to be able to do is help support and advocate for the individual and the information that the physician has given to the client so that they're capable of following through. They may have barriers that make it very difficult. One, it could be a lack of knowledge or understanding, but the resources there with our previous HUD grant, our lead grant, we had ability to purchase some of these items. That's not what this is about at this point in time. So again, it's going to be looking for what are the resources, what do we find out are the needs of individuals. They may not have the money to purchase these pillow covers or mattress covers. They may only have the money to make the copay for the medications because they're still busy paying the rent and getting food on the table.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Abel, second by Supervisor Johnson. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
Thank you very much.
Agenda item number 6, Department of Human Services 2014 second quarter report. Ms. Lori Staves, good evening.
Ooh, Ms. Lori Staves.
What a title. Okay. Before I forget, I will be doing the third quarter report at our budget hearings. Okay, so I'll be back next month during our budget hearings to do a third quarter. But this is our second quarter department-wide. You can see at the end of June, all total, the department is showing an excess levy of just under $400,000. And the majority of that is coming from Brookside, $320,000 of it. And I made a note because that $320,000 is added to their $785,000 that was budgeted to be returned to the general fund. So it'll be just around $1 million that we're projecting to be returned with their budgeted amount of $785,000. A couple of the areas, we always include lots of information for you on pages 2 and 3 are specifically, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are specifically for DADS, the Division of Aging and Disability Services. On page 2, we are seeing a projected increased use of the state institutes, and it's happened pretty much during the second quarter. You can see, though, that the hospital inpatients are going down, so that is helping. What we found is now there are more people getting access for health care, and our hospitals are accepting volunteer admissions and not our involuntary admissions or our chaptered cases. So there's not room. It's a good thing because people are getting health care opportunities now. So for our chaptered cases or for these particular clients, we're seeing the increase at our only other option is our state institutes.
So forgive me for interrupting. So are those folks who are uninsured the chaptered folks?
Mm-hmm.
And probably part of the population that for one reason or another, because of mental illness, et cetera, is difficult to keep insured were they to become.
Right.
Okay.
So, and so that's why you're seeing a decrease or savings in the hospital services, but now we're seeing the institute services increasing.
I realize this is a completely ridiculous question, but I am going to ask it. Has there been any conversation in your professions about how to address that? Because I'm sure we're not alone in this.
No, but what we have been in discussions within the department and within the county exec, and hopefully during our 2015 budget, we're looking at proposing a mental health pilot for psychiatric services. In this area, we are short psychiatric or psychologists or psychiatrists we're just short, period. The country is short. There's the average age of a psychiatrist is 57 years old in the United States. But in this particular community, we're short psychiatric services, plus even those doctors who will see the Medicaid population. You can see that there isn't a huge reimbursement for that. So what we're trying to do is work with one of our providers and put together a mental health care pilot for psychiatric services that we're hoping the administration will work with us and we'll roll out some type, and I'm sure you'll hear more about it. Because there is some funding that we can get for it through Medicaid. And we can also show some savings, because what's happening is some of these people are not being able to see their psychiatrist. They're short services and their medications are out of control, and so they end up in a crisis event.
Supervisor Russell?
One of the things that when I first talked about being a supervisor, you talk about things. To me, this is one of the areas that we got to address. Coming from a person like myself, budgets and all that, I do. I think it's one of the, I think it's of all the crux that we need to look at is this. And I don't think we should gloss over this issue so much. And I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying to rely on Medicaid, I think is difficult. I really think as a county, we need to get out of the box and think of how we can get either more services to these people. And if it requires spending money, so be it. Because it's vitally important that we address this problem as best we can. It can't be ignored anymore. We've addressed so many problems like drug addiction and teen pregnancies and all those things. And we've spent a fortune on those things. And this is the one area I think we really need to address. So I'll leave it at that. But I think this is the comment I'm making at this point that we were to address a budget issue. Mr. Chairman, that's what we should look at. So that's enough
of that.
Thank you.
No, I'm glad you said that. One of the great things about this job is that we don't have to leave everything to the county executive or everything to the administration. If you really feel passionate and you find something and think that it's workable, lay it on the table. You'll have everybody's attention, I guarantee it. Supervisor Johnson.
I second that, and I would be willing to help you with anything. Yes. Because honestly, even though I believe sometimes there is an initial upfront cost, I think one of the reasons our spending is out of control is because of uncontrolled mental health and smaller problems that if we catch early enough, you know, it's just like catching those kids when they first start messing around with drugs. If we can, you know, get them away before we wind up spending so much in the long run, incarceration, I mean, just all kinds of things. So I mean, I couldn't agree more with you. I think that this is one of our biggest problems, that we don't treat mental illness the right way.
I hate to deviate on this, but since we're on the topic as it pertains to this.
As long as you're in favor, you can deviate all you want.
In terms of bringing this number down, preface it with that. Has there been any communication with, you know, Carthage College, UW-Parkside, University of Wisconsin System, State Department of Health, State Department of Workforce Development to try to address this as an issue? Because if not, you know, we can get them all in the room and say, look, you know, as a committee, this is a problem we have. You all are involved in the pipeline of fixing this. Let's lay this out. I mean, we can do that.
I think Greg's right. I think we have to start looking at things as a community. Because I don't think the federal government's going to do us any good stepping in and saving this issue.
Well, they do have specific definitions for, you know, certain underserved areas as it pertains to certain things. And I think mental health is one of them. But I don't think we're defined as an area that's quote unquote in need, although we are. And that can help you a great deal if you can have that definition tweaked or somehow be included into it. So in that sense, in terms of a access to resources standpoint, it makes sense to have them at the table. Beyond that, that's really it.
I think it's across the country, it's something that's underestimated. Do you know what I mean? So for us to say that we're not defined as an area is such a huge statement because, do you know what I mean by that? Because every place is under evaluated.
But if
for
we don't
illness.
Have the folks in the career pipeline to take the job and they don't know how much the job is going to pay, that's why I say it makes sense to have DWD, the state level, at the table so that they can get that out there. This is how much you're going to make. It makes sense to have, you know, University of Wisconsin System, Carthage College there so they can be looking at their students that are taking psychology, you know, so that we can at least have a pool of people to draw from. I realize that's the long term, and there's other things we can do in the short term, but in terms of initiating that conversation,
absolutely,
we can be the first ones.
Absolutely, and I know my first year here, we did discuss things like that, like even seeing if we could work with universities and the county to reimburse tuitions, to sign contracts, to bring people here when they graduate, or to, you know, internships here or something to bring them here. But it never really went anywhere. But that's what we have to start looking at as a county, just things to...
It's one email, and we can get everybody at the table if that's something y'all want to do.
If I can continue a little bit on that, it's across the lines in all aspects, be it political, social. They're all on board with this. There's no one against pushing for this and making it a priority. At the county level, I couldn't think of, especially on the health side, that there'd be no one pushing back, no one. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of anyone for any reason.
I get it. I'm looking at you saying, let's get them in the room and do something and some sort of a commitment so we can move forward.
Yes.
Do something.
So if that's something folks want to pursue, if you have different ideas, if you want to modify that, like I've said before, email me so we can make it happen. Supervisor Gable.
CABA is a great asset in Kenosha. They're out getting factories. If we fed CABA this information, maybe they could run across a psychology center. I mean, I know there's big clinics in cities.
That's a great idea.
We're trying to improve Kenosha, bike trails, whatever. I mean, I think it'd be a great, if we can sell CABA while we're out beating doors, maybe they could run across.
That's a great idea, Mike. We should look into it.
We have the same trouble with general practitioners as we do with psychiatrists.
Or the other question to that too, I guess, is to what extent do we leave that to the hospitals to develop, an arm of medical research, whether that's physical or mental? We're going to have a committee meeting on just that alone. I know that's not part of the budget report, but sorry.
Just to add on, the state is well aware of the shortage of psychiatric providers in Wisconsin, and I know has been working with the medical college and that to see what they can do. But psychiatry isn't one of your sexy doctor fields. I mean, people that want to be an MD generally don't head towards psychiatry. They want to be the plastic surgeon or the heart surgeon or the oncologist or things like that. So it's a very difficult draw. As Lori said, the average age is 56, 57 across the country. So you certainly can contact those folks. They're going to say, we know it, we're working on it, we're trying to do what we can. I mean, telepsychiatry is now a big thing just coming into the state. And that's a group that, one I think that's now in Wisconsin, might have started out in Ohio. And that's where you call a number and the doc's on the screen. That works for a certain population of folks that have some mental illness, but not the very chronic and persistent mental illness that we're kind of dealing with when you look at these numbers. They need to see that person, and you know that person's going to blow you off two or three appointments at a time, and you're not going to discharge them because you're not, drawing in the funds to keep your doors open. So that's where our creative approaches and what Lori was alluding to, what we've been trying to put our heads together with one of our agencies about how can we get a net around those folks, given the resources that we have, and whether that's a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner, which are pretty much allowed to do a lot of the same things psychiatrists can do at a much less cost, reduced cost compared to psychiatrists. So it's things like that we're really taking a hard look at. We'll be back to you guys to say, here's an idea. We think this will work in our community. We know it's worked on some levels because we have an agency that has a nurse practitioner that works there that's able to see 750 to 1,000 is their caseload. And some of those folks you may see once a week, some of those folks once a month, some of those folks maybe, depending on their need, once every 6 months or once a year. But they're seen and they're checked on, and they have a case manager, somebody that's making sure they're getting their medication and things on that line. So it's really what we can do here. I mean, you're much more global view about having CABA bring in a clinic. Good luck. I mean, I know Dr. Sharma, who was a psychiatrist here in our community for many years, retired at the end of August, and we're feeling that now. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the kids, Kenosha Human Development Services, the minute he retired, got 43 calls in one day saying, I need to see somebody, my psychiatrist is leaving. Oh. The system's already overwhelmed, so we need to come up with ideas that we'll present.
Thank you. Again, I'd like to see the numbers on. If you think about the staggering amount of money that we spend on healthcare, preventive, it's unfathomable how much it is. I'm in that business to prevent people from having heart attacks, problems, good pregnancies, all this stuff. What is it? How much do we spend on any preventive type of care for someone that looks like a potential problem at an early age? I don't know. I'm just saying it seems that can't we redirect dollars from some areas just to kind of, it always is about the money typically, is it not? In these situations it seems that way. Can't we redirect some funds from at least from some of the areas that are there?
I think we're always looking at that and examining that. We don't want to cut off our nose and spite our face too, because you have some deep end situations that you need programming on, whether it's from across the street, court ordered services that we got families involved in. And we do have a prevention network out there. that does a lot of work, and some of what you're talking about, you know, we're capturing a lot of kids at a younger age through a program that we run called Families First that's dealing with kids that are labeled SED, severe emotional disturbance, that are starting to develop and what may be a mental health issue as they get older. And so we're putting a lot of services and case management with those families. So, you know, can we expand? You can always expand stuff like that, but you're right, it comes down to where your dollars are and what you want to do with
and,
them.
And there are funding sources for most of those that he's talked about. Mental health, very few.
Yes.
Well, that we can capture, federal or state, mental health, you know what we're saying? Very few avenues except for Medicaid revenue. And we've done very well with increasing our Medicaid programs to draw down revenue. Our CCS, our Comprehensive Community Services, is now in our juvenile program. I mean, we've expanded that, and we have quite a few programs. But again, it's not, it's, you know, 60 cents to 40 cents, you know, for funding. And that is where we're spending, as a department, most of our levy is in our mental health areas.
If I'm not mistaken, for our treatment and diversion program, which started off as a grant, we actually redirected levy in some years following that so that we could continue that. So that does happen. It's just not everywhere that it needs to be able to do that for one reason or another. Supervisor Johnson?
I just wanted to say one thing that Greg had mentioned. You know, just like when healthcare moved to preventative instead of reactionary, being proactive, you saw the shift. We spent more on preventative, but we spent a lot less on the reactive medicine. I would assume that we're going to wind up with the same, only tenfold less, because the reactive response is going to be much more than what we can do as a preventative response, proactive. And it's almost, you know, so I would hazard a guess that we will follow almost a similar pattern as we did with healthcare years ago when we went to preventative models.
Gotcha.
No, I'm done.
If you want to drop this conversation? Or not?
I can't. No, we go. Go ahead.
You know, you're asking us to look at an $18 million borrowing for Brookside for old people. Okay, great. That's a different subject. What do we? You know, why don't we have a facility here in this community for people with these problems? I mean, an actual place where they go, and we treat them, we can take care of them. The counties don't, there's only one. I know it's up in, because no one wants it, up in Fond du Lac or Winnebago.
Yeah, there's two.
Okay,
yeah.
Two.
Yeah.
Two in the
and
entire state.
The hospital, and then we have.
And when they go, it makes your variable budget out of shape anyways, right?
Yes.
So it's like we prevent one of those guys from, persons, people from going there. Your whole budget gets positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
How do we to figure this out? That may not be the best solution, what I just said. I understand that. But you see the circle of this?
No, you're absolutely right. Because part of the funding for our pilot is our expected savings in some of these areas, like for pharmacy services, for psychiatric, you know, for institute, so that they're not ending up, you know, in the deep end, that we're being more preventive. You're absolutely right on that, because that's what we're projecting to savings.
I can't imagine at the size of our community that it wouldn't be more cost effective for us to have our own. You know, like you said, what we're paying to, I mean, I can't imagine for this size of a community that it's not more cost effective for us to have our own.
We do have one facility, the care center, that takes folks that are in crisis situations, whether that's a mental health issue or an alcohol and drug issue that doesn't require intense detox, and can house them for on average 3 to 4 days. You stabilize them, get them hooked up with a doctor, and case managed and back into the community. So it's very short term and much more cost effective, right, than sending them up to Winnebago or Mendota or even over across the road to St. Luke's and Racine. Mm-hmm. So we do have that type of facility. Of course, it's limited in its size and they're generally always full. But that's what this community's had for years. And, you know, whether it's looking at expanding a service like that or coming up with even a something more intensive. I mean, we can look at all that stuff and certainly share that with you and let you know what's there and how the impact it's had. I think it's
Do you have that in one of your stats here? But usually it's over 700 people have been admitted there in a year.
For the care center?
Yes.
Yeah, and page three, excuse me, no, my glasses.
Right into her presentation.
Moving on to page three.
Thank you, John. right up at the top, we have the admissions for hospitals, institutes, and care center, and care centers up at the top because they have the most. So you can see even like from 01 to 14, you know, it's almost 100 more. Admissions. So we are utilizing it more.
And it's much more effective because you're keeping people in the community where they're coming back and you're hooking them up with the service that they're going to get when they hopefully come back into the community. Mm-hmm. So it's been a plus for
Oh, yes. It's worked out very well.
Supervisor Cable?
We send them up to St. Luke's. We have two major hospitals in Kenosha, and they have no facilities at all.
They closed their mental health facilities years ago, I believe, because they weren't
profitable.
Correct.
And they're also a community-based hospital, right? You know, the services, you know, I mean, I guess I have issues with that. We have the care center. I mean, these hospitals are here to serve the community. Shouldn't they set...
That'd be a discussion you'd have to have with
them. We do have periodically from time to time the Kenosha County Healthcare Executives Roundtable where most of those folks in some capacity are present. I think that meets on a quarterly basis, if I'm not mistaken. The next one should be, I think, middle of next month, if I'm correct. Certainly those individuals would relish the opportunity to come to this committee and answer those questions if you had them. We can extend that invitation.
The problem is it's not profitable for a private entity to do it, right. But it would be profitable or at least more cost effective for us to do it for ourselves. Do you know what I mean? Because they don't make enough money on these people. Most of these people, I would assume, are on aid. Do you know what I mean?
Which hospital in Kenosha is not making a lot of money?
I'm talking about if they were to have an inpatient behavioral health area,
it's not
mental
that they
health, or
don't make money. They lose money. It's like Brookside. We can only take so many Medicaid patients because we lose money on every Medicaid patient, and so we take more Medicare patients to pay for the Medicaid patients.
Exactly. So for a private entity, you can sit and talk to them, but if I was
they
a business person,
levy,
I wouldn't.
They can't
I wouldn't,
tap levy dollars to
yeah,
make up their shortfall.
Absolutely, and their stock. I mean, they're not going to have people who will let them make that kind of a.
Their doors
investment.
Won't stay open.
Yeah.
Supervisor Blatt?
Can you tell me a little more about this care center? I mean, I'm very new to this, so I don't know where this is, anything about it, and I think St. Luke's. Do they take adult inpatients?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because
the
I
problem
know,
that Lori was alluding to yeah. is they got full, and so
for
then
voluntary
you're
with children
state,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then you yeah. work with the state institutes, so which charge a heck of a lot more than. St. Luke's,
oh,
I think
yeah.
they're $1,000 a day at the state.
Yes.
St. Luke's is mm-hmm. over 600,
yeah.
a little over 600. Mm-hmm. The care center is run through Kenosha Human Development Services,
okay.
and it's located on 5th Avenue and I think like 61st Street or something like that. It's the old, old Kenosha Hospital. So
okay.
tells me. It's a brick two-story building okay. that's owned by the Episcopal Church right now, and they leased it to kids for a number of years to provide the service. And it's a set up as a temporary
crisis.
Yeah, crisis bed services for folks that are, as I mentioned, either in a mental health crisis. So the police are called, the crisis for adults only. The adult crisis worker to go out, assess that person, determine if their mental health need, if they could be released back to home or they needed more structure until they got stabilized. So with that decision, a lot of these folks get diverted from the hospitals, if at all possible, and end up at the care center. And they'll usually spend an average of 3 to 4 days there. They get Dr. Matt McCarthy, who's a psychiatrist that works with kids, will go and assess their needs, or one of the nurse practitioner that they've hired also would go to the home, assess. If they aren't on medication, get them the medication that fits whatever their need is, and then have somebody hook them up with the service outside of the care center. So you're not just discharging them with, here's 10 days of prescriptions, have a good day, and boy, we'll see you in 11 days, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're making sure that they're following up with their appointments and getting their services needed.
So what's their capacity there?
It is.
What's the average length of stay when they
are? Average length of stay is about three to four days.
Their average length of stay has been 3.5 so far this year, 3.5 days.
And how many people can they have?
I think it's a 20.
Is it that large?
I didn't think. I thought it was 18.
18 or 20. It's somewhere.
You can go there. You can call them up, and they'll take you through the care.
You know, I should have known that, but I'm sorry. I don't have it there.
Yeah, I don't.
Is there any plan to expand that, the care center?
Well, you couldn't expand it at that current facility.
No.
It's old and maxed out.
That's maxed out, yeah.
So we did have some discussions a couple years ago about the care center and what it should look like in the future. But haven't gone beyond that, really, because it ultimately, at that point, it was meeting the needs of the folks that were getting in.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you already have a model for it, you know, then maybe you can talk about expansion elsewhere, but not necessarily here, instead of, like, trying to build a whole.
Right. For long range, that's a great plan, to tell you the truth. Yeah, it's just that we felt we needed something. It's getting a little out of control quicker than what we anticipated. I don't know if Sunday's paper had great article.
Yes, I saw that.
Mental health. I don't know if any of you saw this. I just have a couple copies. You can breeze through it. And then not only are we doing that, but there's a mental health summit that I'll give you this. This is particularly for African American community on mental health. And so I can pass those around to you too. That is being held and sponsored by the Division of Health. This is constantly in our forefront. Okay. And you'll see, you know, this isn't the first time. I mean, on page 4 and 5, we've been giving you these new charts on crisis contacts. And one's for adult on page 4, and on page 5 are juvenile crisis. And the purple part of these pies on these pages are for mental health. And so you can see that just in from 11 in the adult crisis on page 4, and just in from 2011 to 2014 estimate, that we're up over 1,000 cases in 3 years, just for the mental health. And if you add the juvenile side on the next page, that's 306 more cases. So it's 13 more than 1,300 cases in 3 years that we're adding just to the mental health pie part of this. And then, of course, our other problem is our suicide. And the green pie on these charts are the suicide attempts or danger of suicide. And that's gone up between adult and juvenile, over 276 cases in the last 3 years. And of course, you know, in their ME's office, we give you those statistics on the suicides, and those are going up with drug overdoses too.
Supervisor Decker.
Are there any studies or anything showing why our mental health cases are going up, especially like in juveniles, so much?
To pinpoint certain things, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not aware of anything nationally other than that's a trend. So I mean, why are folks becoming more aware and referring earlier and trying to deal with some of this stuff in a prevention mode, perhaps, versus waiting till it gets more and more out of control? I think certainly when kids enter into schools, especially, staff is better trained on identifying certain behavioral issues or patterns that may show or kind of place them into an area where they would need special assistance. On the adult side.
And I don't know, John, do you think if you're seeing the adults and those are family members, you know, those are their parents maybe, perhaps, if they're having difficulties with mental health or suicide attempts, does it follow, you know, with the children?
Are there studies on that?
There is studies that there's a genetic link to like depression. I mean, it's same
you
as
do
like
what
alcoholism
you learn
and things like that. Yeah. So,
you know,
how much of that is spilling over from adult to juvenile? I don't know all these numbers, but maybe a certain.
The economy has not helped in the last 5 years, so you know that's hit the families pretty hard.
I'm just wondering if they're actually studying it, because there's obviously a rise. What is caught?
Very much so.
what's causing it?
We'll talk to our, the folks over at Crisis and see if they have a better feel on that.
Or they can steer, steer us towards some stats.
Because catching it before it starts is better than waiting till it.
Yes.
And if they're not even studying why they think it's starting, you know, is it? Are they some of these mental? Are they grouping in children with like in the autism spectrum, where they have mental health issues, or, you know, just different things?
Right. No, I know that's not part of it. You know, at least the graphs that I produce isn't part of this.
Right, I'm sorry.
In the budget for the sheriff's department, I'm new to this, so it's a big budget. It in theory, could affect them. I mean, people that have mental issues, not all of them, but some are a threat to us. Could be.
Yes.
A guy going crazy with a gun is not a good thing. The sheriff's department would agree with that.
Or an alcoholic.
Okay. Where in their budget would they do something on? Do they do this? And you know, granted, you don't represent their department. I'm not trying to put you on the spot for them. Do they have any preventive things like this in their budgets, or do they do? Okay,
plus if they have someone. Who
I know they have DARE and things like that. I know, yeah. But I'm talking about.
I don't know about.
If someone gets incarcerated that is exhibiting symptoms of what the jail perceives as mental illness, they'll contact the adult crisis unit, which comes out and does an assessment. Mm-hmm. So they would assess, you know, the person's mental capacities and risk for harm to self or others, ultimately. And if it's determined there's a risk to self, the jail takes appropriate measures or make sure that they see the, I know they have a, I don't know if it's a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant or somebody that they can rely on to make sure this person gets medication, right, and starts to look at some of those systems. But it's our crisis system that goes in there and does that assessment for the sheriff's department.
Rest Johnson.
Our deputies have received training so that they can recognize mental health issues as compared to just an irate, abusive husband, you know what I mean?
And they're doing training. I went through this.
Supervisor Johnson had the floor.
So, and in addition to that, also, they're working closely with like the mental health courts to ensure that instead of incarcerating people, they're getting the treatment that they should get. And I know that one of the objectives, goals for the sheriff in his next term is to implement more mental health awareness programs as part of the sheriff's department. Also, even towards children of people who are being arrested when there's situations that are going on that are very traumatizing. Just all kinds of things that he's looking at for the next 4 years too.
Surprise, Gabe.
NAMI is doing this, and they've got a grant. They bring in sheriff deputies, firemen, you know, police officers to train them on how to deal with a crisis, rather than taking them to jail, you know, stabilize the situation and get them to the crisis center. You know, I mean. And they've been doing that for 4 years, 5 years. And, you know, hopefully, you know, it's a lot easier. Once you bring them down to the jail, I guess it becomes if you can deal them in the home and get them to the hospital halfway stabilized, it's a lot easier. But they are training.
They are. And I can't remember the exact number right now that we actually have trained, but they do come and they tell us, they keep us up to date. And every year
and
there's more.
And they train us. I was trained on it. I mean, they do have... You know, you can go there if you're willing to give up. I think it was 3 days. You go through the training. It's terribly interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of fun.
So do you want me to continue the other division? Who cares about the other division? We're doing fine. End of story. No. Probably really quick, let me finish with DCFS. Their juvenile placements is up a little bit. We're utilizing more psychological services. Go figure. But Second quarter, we always see a rise, and so we are already putting some prevention plans in place to lower that. So we don't feel that that's going to be a major issue by the end of the year. Our medical examiner, you know, I always say this, if I can straight line death, we're probably on about 160 autopsies, which is what we budgeted for. So it's their revenue fees that haven't really come in the way that we expected through June 30th. But again, the charts on pages 8 and 9 for the medical examiner shows our death statistics by type, by manner of death, and then our accidental deaths are broken apart on page 9 between motor vehicle, drug overdose, and other. So you can see, I mean, already we're at 3 homicides through June 30th, and there were only 4 altogether last year. Suicides, we were 22 last year, and we're already at 13, so we're more than half of what we were last year at this point. So it's not trending down for 2014.
But the overall number seems like it might be less. Is this at the end of June, or is this halfway through the year? Okay,
yeah,
so it's not.
It's halfway through the year.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's halfway through the year. And then the last two pages are Brookside's, and again, that last page shows where they are with the average daily census for Medicare, but I think you've probably heard enough about Brookside in the last couple weeks. But,
you can never hear too much about Brookside.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, I can.
All that money.
Oh, you can?
Well, I'm just being honest. I can't hear too much about Brookside.
You almost brought a tear to my eye because what you said about Brookside, I'm like, that's absolutely correct.
I know it's correct. I've been following the census since I got on the board.
Isn't that great?
I read this already.
I love it.
Yeah.
So
the average cost is $220 a day, private pay rate. Yeah. I paid $356 for Medicare.
Sign her up.
We're going to hear it 3 more times this year.
Yeah. Oh, at least. We got budget hearings coming. So
Brookside could give us extra money to pay for mental health.
They kind of do.
They do help offset.
Yeah. And the bigger they get, the more money they can throw back in.
Point of information, just really quickly. The proposed expansion, obviously that's not part of this, but we expect to see that at budget time as, okay, cool, just curious.
In what capacity, I'm not exactly sure, because I know we have to go through all committees, you know, building and grounds and finance and human services and...
But presumably it would start here first.
Whoever's first on after the 8th. When he gives you when the budget goes out. So I don't know where building and grounds is. We're on the 22nd. We're on the 22nd.
Okay. Then, since you brought it up.
You can't discuss it. I just wanted to know when it was coming.
You opened it up. There's precedence.
It's not how the law reads.
You can discuss it. You just can't vote on it.
That's right. You did it.
That's the law.
One of the things I've requested, and maybe you guys will help them, is... In the projections that were made on Brookside, there's an awful lot of leap of faith on the reimbursements from Medicare in the future. You know that. One of the things that I'm going to have them do in Mr. Gerson's office is, what happens if it's this, this, and this? What will those things look like? If you don't, okay, do you know what I'm saying? You made an assumption of 1.15% each year throughout 20 years, which is a major leap of faith. It just is, but that's not the discussion today. Can you help with that?
Yes.
I send you that information?
I was on vacation, and I just came back today, and he did send me some information. We are meeting this week.
Okay. Do you understand where I'm coming from with that? That was my request, if you're wondering where that's coming from. Because...
I think you might have mentioned that. Yeah, I think you might have mentioned it.
Yes. So,
you okay.
That's fine. I mean, requested information, so I just want to get into
it. Okay, anyways, I'll leave that there, but that was me.
He'll
that
get
asked.
Back to you.
Okay,
he'll
thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I'm done. Unless we want to talk about mental health again.
I love this.
I thank all of you for showing the passion for this, because it's also shown the same passion within our department. And we work very hard on trying to get some answers. So I thank you for the support on this, because it is if anything came out of Robin Williams' death, it was more awareness. And it there's no economic boundary, there's no age boundary, there's nothing on this.
I think every other year we wind up with some great reminder that we had the shooting last year with the mentally ill young man who, you know, turned into a gun control issue, but it was definitely a mental health issue. And
it's very close to our hearts.
Every year something happens that puts it right in our face.
Loughner.
Pardon me?
No.
What did you do? Anything else? Don't look so excited.
Not me.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 7, such other business is authorized by law. Yes, Mr. Jansen, have a seat. Have a seat where I can see you instead of looking through someone's head.
I've been very quiet. I got about an hour. I like to spend. No, just as a reminder, I believe you'll be getting your budget books on October 7th. And as in past years, Lori and I are available to meet with individuals or a group or whatever you see fit prior to our October 22nd hearing where we'll present our budgets. If you have any questions on anything you see in the book and want to sit down with us, that'd be great. Or if you'd like to email us questions, that's fine. We are more than happy to address it.
If you have a question, maybe somebody else does, and I would like to address it, you know what I mean, either personally or I might add it to my budget presentation.
So, that's all I had.
The only thing I would add to that is for those of us, since this is our committee, and I'm sure there'll be other supervisors from other committees forwarding you their questions, let's get ours in as early as possible. So if there's something from last year that you know you think might be coming up this year that maybe you didn't quite understand or had some lingering questions about, maybe it was a rumor that you heard, whatever it is, ask it early. As soon as possible, no last-minute stuff, because they'll be running back and forth dealing with finance and all of that drama. So let's get our stuff out of the way early, if we can.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I hope we can bring that monthly update back. And yeah, I did screw up as chair because I should have done a better job.
I'm blaming you.
I take full responsibility for that. At some point, maybe during the summer, I'll actually do what I intended to do.
You realize summer's over.
Yeah. I thought you wanted
summer 2015. Okay. Any committee member comments? I have one. I just want to clarify something earlier if nobody else has anything. My mentioning to Ms. Jacott over the phone that you have the ear of politicians, utilize their connections. What she's doing, we've had agency nonprofits and churches in this community that have been trying to do, and for one reason or another, have not been successful, whether it's financial resources, whether it's human capital to make it happen. And she's actually doing it. So just to clarify, that's what I meant, was directing her to those channels of folks that are involved in those areas so that if she wanted to do something more here, because she is one of ours, that would be places that we could send her for her to partner and work with. So just wanted to clarify that because I think it might have come across, might have ruffled a few feathers the way I said it. Anything from anybody? Our lovely, very quiet youth and governance member. Anything? You just pop out with something random one day. Just like burst into
one day she is just going to go off.
There you go.
And we're going to be like this.
A rousing chorus of let it go.
You don't remember Megan when she was on the committee and Mullen Hill was all screaming and hollering about all the recall election
that
science?
That would be a conversation we should have being recorded.
Motion
by Supervisor Decker, second by Supervisor Johnson.
Aye.
To go.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're screaming about all the yard signs all over.
Do you want to wait till she